Hello, Mammoth, and welcome to our show in layman's terms. I'm Matthew Lehman of Matthew Lehman Real Estate, and I want to thank you for joining us today. As always, I have my business partner and co-host, Ashley Toops, with me today, and we're going to dive into a discussion about loans in our market. And Ashley, are you ready to talk about loans today?
Yeah, it's fun. It's such fun stuff. Let's do it.
I know. Real fun topic, loans. But actually, there is some important stuff here today, and as much as it may not sound like a super fun topic, there's some really important things in here, especially that relates to business and residential. So today we're going to talk about two areas of lending currently experiencing big impacts as a result of this COVID-19 pandemic. So the first of the areas is really relates to business and SBA loans and how the business community or the commercial real estate community here in Mammoth Lakes could potentially benefit from that. And Ashley, I think you were going to go over some residential stuff. What were you going to, can you give us an overview of what you were going to talk about today?
Yeah. You know, I had a really great discussion with one of our, one of the mortgage brokers I do a lot of work with, and I think we've all seen a lot of stuff in the news, but it's really kind of a constantly changing issue. One side of it is what loan programs are and aren't available, because that's changed a lot recently. Some of the major loan programs that we see a lot in our area that have disappeared. They've just been closed down for now. And also, you know, this whole issue that's now bouncing around of forbearance or loan deferral. There's a few different terms people are trying to use that sound less scary, but basically the idea of what can happen, what programs are available for you to maybe not have to pay your mortgage, but then on the back end, what that could end up looking like for our borrowers.
So they're going to want to stay tuned for that. I imagine a lot of people out there that have a home or thinking of buying one or even refinancing are probably going to want to listen to the whole episode. I mean, even if you guys aren't interested in the business or commercial side, I think you'll still find it interesting, but you may want to hang in there for the residential aspect of it. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of kick things off here. And because things are changing so fast, I do want to jump in, and I'm sure by the time we finish this episode, everything we've talked about will have already changed the way things are moving. So
we'll have to rewrite the whole thing again.
We'll just do another episode tomorrow. But anyway, we'll try to get you a high level. I'll start off with really some of the SBA programs that are out there. And I've never really been one to work with the SBA or deal with them, but given the certain circumstances that are out there with the government really putting out this $2.2 trillion stimulus package, and it's really not stimulus as much as it's really just trying to keep people employed during this, you know, this time when we're supposed to stay inside and basically not work. So it's a way for folks to still pay their bills and try to keep some income coming in. So the first program I want to talk about, and Ash, I know you're familiar with it. It's the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP.
Sure. Yeah. We'll just edit all that out. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, what this program is, and this is a program that you will actually work with directly with your lender. And versus going through, let's say, the SBA, you're going to go right to your lender and they'll help you through this program. And it really, really relates primarily to employers and even some self-employed people. So the intent of it is to help folks get through their payroll. So if you have employees and right now, let's say you're a restaurant and you've got, you know, 20 employees and you can't keep them on because you're obviously not bringing in any revenue, it's a means to get a loan and keep them on the payroll and also pay utilities, rent or mortgage interest, and other payroll related items for up to 2 months. So, you know, I talked to a lot of my restaurant friends and, you know, this is something they're just waiting for this to come in right now, because this is going to be a lifesaver for them, because right now, you know, a lot of challenges with the restaurant community is they, you know, the cash flow that they're just, the money comes in, it goes right back out. And so that's a big one. So the PPP program, and do that through your local lender. And Another thing that's really interesting about this program is it does include salaries, wages, commissions, tips, and things of that nature. So it does include independent contractors. And that's something that hasn't historically been included, or even really, independent contractors, even though they make up probably a good majority of the workforce in the country. It seems like we're the ugly stepchild of the work world. So I'm glad to see that they're included in there to keep everybody busy. So, as I mentioned before, you probably want to go through your local regional bank. There was actually an article I read recently, and it's actually just now coming on the news on CNBC, where a lot of folks went to Bank of America. Obviously, Bank of America is, one of the largest lenders, if not the largest lender in the country. And the first day they had received 66,000 applications for this, PPP loan. And they just barely got a portal set up for them to do that. But, one of the challenges that they ran into was they were giving preferential treatment to people that had a line of credit with them already. And this program is designed to be on a first come, first serve basis.
Yes.
And really not without bias.
Yeah, they walked that back pretty quickly, it seemed like. They got some instant feedback on that whole thing, and they walked that one back pretty quick.
They did. They walked it back almost the next day. And I don't know how much of it they walked back or what happened on it. It's still, I think, a little bit up in the air, but from what I heard earlier today, that class action lawsuit's actually been filed against them. And the lawsuit's basically for them prioritizing this thing where you had certain people that were desperate to get the funds, and then they got put on the back burner. So I guess we're going to see what happens with that. Gosh, anytime it seems like we get some sort of stimulus money and put it in the hands of the bank just, I don't know. It's something that's pretty simple here,
and they
seem to complicate it.
It seems like, there was a bit of a breakdown in the communication. The feds, with as much pressure as they were getting to get this stimulus bill passed, they put it out that this money was gonna be there, and then that people could apply for it. Except the banks, all pretty much across the board, seem like they were caught a little unawares as far as how they were supposed to take these applications. I know Union Bank put out an email to businesses, which I do some banking with them, and it basically said, here's what we know. But in short, we still don't know personally as Union Bank how they're supposed to be processing these loans. So they're saying get the process started on the SBA.gov /gov website, but don't necessarily expect to be able to walk in an application to us today and have us know what to do with it, which is unfortunate, of course, because I'm sure the banks are going to be trying to help all of their customers that bank with them. And some of them don't really know how to do that. There was also a lot in the news, and I think we saw it at finance.yahoo.com, that there was a bit of a back and forth there, and that the feds originally came out saying that the borrowers were going to be able to get these loans at 0.5%, and the bank said not a chance. We can't even break even at 0.5% with having to process all of these loans. And the banks wanted to see it at 4%, and somehow they got it to 1%, which seems a lot lower than what the banks wanted. But yeah, in general, just seemed to be a bit of a breakdown in communication of the idea of this wonderful stimulus package and all of this money for these businesses that you've talked about really need it, and then the reality of how to actually get it to them.
Yeah, well, and it's I guess you're right in that. You listen to B of A, I probably need to wait and see what really comes out of it. It's probably easy to point the finger. I mean, it is $2.2 trillion being sent out there. So hopefully they get their portals set up. And what I did hear today from the Fed was that even if you miss out on this, there is more money coming. So if you applied, you are not going to miss out on that. So they have assured the business community that these loans will be available. Even if they miss this, there will be something available right after this or even concurrently. So there is some good news there. So bottom line, I guess, is that there's just that we do have this funding out there available for businesses and commercial people. And, you know, I think there's $349 billion being made available to the business community through this of the total $2.2 trillion. I'm not sure where the rest of money is going, but
that is the trillion-dollar question.
It is. That's the trillion-dollar question. And, you know, you look at the applications. I mean, on the first day, they said Bank of America alone made up 10% of the available money just in one day, one bank. So it kind of, that should have been a red flag right there that we might be a little short, but we'll find out. Like I said, it's on a first come first serve basis. So hopefully, you know, they get these people in there and people that are really desperate to get these funds in their hands will. I'm just curious what kind of, you know, how they're going to track all this, who's really going to know where the money went, how it went, how it got spent. And all that. And it's, I don't know if that's going to come later or
That's a bit of, you know, I want to be positive about this, you know, quote unquote stimulus package. And I want to be positive and hope that it gets to the right people who are going to use it to do what it's supposedly intended to do, right? Like you said in the beginning, keep workers paid so that people can pay rent. And then, you know, as we talked about in our last podcast, you know, if workers can't pay rent, then landlords can't pay mortgages, then it's just the defaults just kind of keep flowing up the line there. So it's great in theory to have these workers still get paid. But I think one of the things that really, you know, we might not find out all the answers till we see how this plays out. But some of my biggest questions on this goes to the paybacks or forgiveness of these loans, because there are those qualifications in there that they want you to use this money to keep people employed. The money is supposed to last you for, you know, 10 weeks, you know, of what your expenses are, but then how long are you supposed to keep these people employed for? And if we have a longer term economic slowdown here, are you taking this money and vowing to keep all of these people on payroll at the same rates, and for how long? And
I want to touch on that on this next loan, because I think it applies to that, the next one, as well as the PPP loan. And it's, you know, it's, that's a big question. I actually went through both of the loans and was reading in detail, you know, trying to find just that out. And I do want to touch on that. And it, what I'd like to do actually is go into the other loan that's available, though, for the business community. And it's called the EIDL loan, which is an economic injury and disaster relief loan. And it's in ways it's similar. I mean, it's still coming from, you know, the Fed, the Treasury Department, but this one you'll actually apply for through the SBA and versus going to your local bank. So this is a different loan. It's not specific to payroll. It actually covers a wider variety of things.
Sure.
You know, so it can have different economic losses in there. Let's say you have you're a landlord and you have tenants that don't pay, or they walk, or they skip town, or something like that, or, you know, any other type of economic damage that you may have incurred. It actually covers a spectrum, and I think it will still cover payroll, mortgages, and things of that nature. So it's nice to know that there's a couple of different options out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that, like you said, the inclusion of the independent contractors, the self-employed people, you know, that's rare. That's rare to see self-employed people included in these. But in this day and age, when you have all these gig workers and, you know, really a lot of people doing self-employed work, then it is, it's, I think, essential to keep workforce going. To help us get the economy flowing again, or keep people paying their bills.
And eating.
Yeah, and eating.
Eating's good.
Eating food, paying bills, you know, is the essentials.
The essentials, yeah. Well, hopefully, I mean, they're saying this, these loans are going to come out pretty quickly here. I know some of them may take longer to process, but there is a $10,000 advance loan that will come available. So I think when you apply, they actually send you another quick little application. And they're saying within 3 to 5 days, they'll have this $10,000 advance to the applicants for. And I think that one's completely forgivable, the advances. And then the remainder of it, and we'll get into that again, as you mentioned, you know, it could be or could not be forgivable. But I know that this EIDL loan, you know, really just provides economic support to small businesses, really just to help them overcome temporary losses that they're experiencing now as a result of this pandemic. So,
yeah, I guess one of my other questions, too, as it relates to some of these businesses and what the values are in the loans. What is the benefit to, depending on how, again, how this is all tracked as far as what you spent your money on and how, when it comes back time to, is it forgivable or not, is, you know, is there enough benefit in it for these small businesses, take the restaurants, like you were talking about, is there enough benefit in it for the business owner to take on this loan and whatever liability comes with it versus just educating your employees on unemployment? I mean, I know unemployment is through the roof, and I have heard from, you know, just seeing on Facebook or talking to other friends who are regular W-2 employees that it is, of course, taking quite a while to actually get unemployment benefits or get things processed. But you know, what is the,
or even get a response that they've even received
your
application.
Yeah, even get the number.
There's no phone number. There's no email. There's
no one to talk to. So I know that's an incredibly bogged down system, but, you know, is it worth it to the business owners to take out this loan versus just having their employees apply for unemployment?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. You know, one of the things that's in the loan, one of the requirements. So let's say you apply for this loan, a payroll loan or something to get your employees paid. And as you mentioned, you know, you pay your employees for now for the next 2 months. And then all of a sudden we open up business and everybody's supposed to be honky dory and back to work. Well, it says in the criteria for this loan, you have to keep your employees, you have to bring your employees back and keep them at the same pay. I think by June or June 30th, I got to double check the date, but it doesn't say how long you have to have them employed.
Right.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, do they have to be employed or do they have to be paid for employment during those last 2 months, or is it a year or is it 2 years? And I'm hearing different numbers, and I don't know what you've
heard.
Yeah,
that's that same thing. And that I mean, I find that, and from what I've heard from some of my friends who do own small businesses, that's kind of a major make or break question, right? Because who knows how many employees they're going to have or which employees. If it's 2 years from now, I mean, that's a pretty big ask.
Yeah. And I, you know, giving to your point, you know, I was talking to a restaurant owner last night, and he's applied for this loan. And he said, you know, yeah, my outflow of money is $80,000 a month. And for employees and other things that would apply under this loan. So I guess the big question is, let's say he takes $80,000 twice, so $160,000, and then all of a sudden he finds out come June when you guys got everybody back and working, I just can't keep them on. I mean, the tourism to Mammoth has dropped off
And
we don't have anybody here. I've got to lay off 50% of my people, at least for the next few months or 6 months. Well, now he's going to be liable for paying those people, but not having gotten the benefit of having them working because his doors are closed.
Right.
So he's out $160,000. I think that's what
you're
talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, I think that would be a major concern for a lot of small. There are some industries that probably can project out a bit further, you know, and maybe especially some of the larger industries that can project out, that funny enough, since this is for people with 500 or fewer employees, maybe it wouldn't even apply to them, but you know, those kind of bigger businesses that can say, oh no, no, we'll use the money. We'll keep these people. We'll do something with them, you know, for the next two years. But for, for some of these smaller businesses, I think in Mammoth in particular, like you said, we don't really know what the fallout's going to be on tourism from all of this and how long it's going to take. And if your loan runs out in 10 weeks, but you're expected to keep up that payroll for the next 2 years, that could kill your business faster than the crash.
Could.
So,
yeah, exactly. Well, I guess that's where the cure is worse than the sickness, the illness. Yeah. So that's not necessarily good. Well, I'm going to find an answer to that one, because I think it's an important one. For some reason, I suspect that they have to be employed for that 2 month period. In other words, you have to pay them. If you take the money, you have to actually pay them for it.
Sure. And that would make
sense. That's the thing I'm wondering about.
Yeah, that would make sense, right? Yeah. If you were taking the money and you were saying, I am going to use this money for the 2 months that it's supposed to last for to pay people, not pay off my personal home mortgage or whatever, you know, or pay off my credit cards or whatever it is. Then fine. Then that's a great deal. You know, you're buying 2 months worth of employment and business operation for these companies. But depending on how much longer it stretches past that, it could be a deal breaker.
Yeah. Well, I guess the important thing for us to tell the folks listening here is there's really two primary loans. There are a couple other little bridge loans and things like that, express loans available out there. But the one that I'm finding most of the business community is congregating to, and the commercial folks out there in the real estate world, are these two loans. It's the EIDL loan and the PPP loan through the SBA. Right. So feel free to look those up and get some more information if you need. But I, you know, Ashley and I certainly wanted to point it out to everybody listening that they're available, and you certainly want to take a look at them. So we just talked about SBA loans and how that can benefit the commercial and business markets. But one thing that's going to really appeal to a lot of people out there is residential loans. And I know you've done some research, and both of us have been keeping up on what's happening with the residential loans out there. So I don't know if you wanted to go ahead and just kind of kick it off for us.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of info out there. And so I actually called a colleague of ours, someone who does a lot of loans and mortgage work for a lot of my buyers, Margo Zen of Diversified Mortgage. And I had a conversation with her about, you know, what's the newest news and what's really, I think, going to affect our area. And I know you and I are both kind of shocked about some of these latest developments. So as far as I think one of the major stories here is the different types of major loan programs that have gone away, maybe temporarily. We'll see. Hopefully they come back. But for right now, some of the biggest ones, I think one of them for our area in particular is the jumbo loan program. And for people who aren't familiar with jumbo loans, that's basically a term used for anything over the conventional loan amount. So for Inyo and Mono counties, to qualify as a conventional Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, USDA loan, those are all going to be a max amount of $529,000 for the loan. Anything over that goes into a special kind of different kind of loan called a jumbo loan. And those have basically been put on hold as of right now.
That's just
Fargo,
shocking to me. It's just shocking to think that any loans over 529 are going away. And if that happens, I mean, that's a substantial amount of our community.
It's huge, especially for Mammoth Lakes, even June Lake, even into Crowley. You know, that's, I think you just recently ran the numbers for your monthly market report, and you said the median price in Mammoth Lakes for a home that's sold is $787,000. So that is over $200,000 more than what you can get a loan for right now.
Right. Wow. That's yeah, gosh, I'm gonna even double, triple, quadruple check that. That's just crazy to even think that they've gone that far. That's
Yeah, I
amazing.
mean, Wells Fargo was one of the last holdouts. They were still trying to get these jumbo loans approved, and then 2 days ago, they finally dropped the programs from their repertoire as well. So now those are basically gone. Now a little bit of hope in there. Margo is saying there is still a possibility to get some of those deals done through kind of creative financing with something they call like a combo loan, which is basically where you take out a first and a second mortgage on the same property during the purchase. But that's all going to be a real case by case basis. So, definitely not the program we've been used to using quite a bit up here.
Wow.
And then another one that's going to be, I think, is kind of a major deal for our area, especially Mammoth Lakes, is the condo hotel program. So the condo hotels, well, what for anyone who doesn't know what a condo hotel is, Matthew, what do you think are probably the major condo hotel developments in our area?
Well, a condo hotel, I guess, for people that aren't really familiar with it, is just that. It's a condo and it's a hotel. So, up here, our best explanation of what that is if you walk through the Village at Mammoth or look at the Westin or Juniper Springs Lodge or something of that nature. So, those operate like hotels. And for guests coming up here, I mean, it looks, it feels, smells like a hotel and everything else, except the individual units are actually owned by, individuals, and they do have the amenities in those rooms. Typically, they have room service, or they have calls going down to a lobby. There's a front desk and whatnot. So there's certain criteria that the lender uses to categorize that as a condo hotel, and it was popular. I know when they first came up here, that back when Mammoth and IntraWest was coming up here, the condo hotel was very popular, and financing was readily available.
Yeah, absolutely. And that program was something that I know took a few years for the lenders to get approval on, and now it has been one of the first ones to get axed while everything is kind of up in the air here.
Yeah.
And then another one, and this is primarily, I think, was being used by independent contractors, self-employed borrowers. Was the bank statement program. So traditionally, when you go to get pre-qualified for a loan, you send in the lender your taxes, right? Your tax statements for the last couple of years. And for a lot of self-employed, small business owners, independent contractors, we all try to take advantage of as many tax deductions as humanly possible, right? And so maybe our taxes, what it says our income is on our taxes is a little bit lower than some of the actual cash flow we have coming in. So they came up with a really cool program to benefit those types of people where you could get qualified by showing a couple years worth of bank statements, which may have a lot better income qualification for you than what your taxes show. And I had quite a few of my clients use that program, and that is also now gone.
Wow.
So
Wow. Well, there's
scary
three.
stuff. Yeah. So those
Three
are the
down,
three.
and how many more to go?
Yeah, those are the three kind of big ones. And like, why are these programs going away? Well, basically, lenders need liquidity to cover these additional, what they call non-qualified mortgages. They need to have a certain amount of money to be able to back these because they're not traditional conventional loans. And with so many people, they say about 30% of mortgage holders in the United States right now are trying to get some sort of a deferral. Or a forbearance is what they call it on their mortgages, so they don't have to pay their mortgages for a little bit. Well, that's less money coming into the banks and less money they can then use to lend back out again. And
And
also,
for the listeners out there, though, I mean, let's clarify what forbearance really means.
Yes. Too. Yes. So this is a big one, because I'm afraid for some of our clients and some of these homeowners out there that think that might be confusing forbearance with forgiveness, because it most certainly is not. Forbearance is literally delaying what you owe, but it does not go away. So if you have a mortgage of $2,000 and you call your bank and you say, I'd like a forbearance, or I'd like a deferral on my mortgage because I can't pay it this month. And they say, great, we'll give you 6 months of forbearance. And you think, fantastic. Well, the problem is that at the end of that 6 months, on month seven, you're not only going to owe the $12,000 for the 6 months. It's like a balloon payment. You'll owe the $12,000 for the 6 months you didn't pay, plus the extra $2,000 for that month seven. So you suddenly now owe $14,000 in a lump sum to your bank, due immediately.
And that's if they forbear it for 6 months. Now, I think currently the forbearance at the state level only goes till May 31st, I believe. So it's going to basically be April and May. So it's really two right now. Who knows if they're going to change that number or not. But so right now they're allowed to forbear for 2 months without it actually an eviction process taking place, right?
Yeah. Well, and I know that is definitely that's something for sure for rent, because I think that's important too for our listeners who, are renting right now. I know there's a lot of people looking to get some sort of a rent deferral. Again, not forgiveness, just deferring the payments. But yeah, I think the real kicker for both of these, depending on how long, and landlords have the ability to work out terms as far as how long it's deferred, as do the lenders, how long they're going to defer these payments. But I think the real kicker people need to keep in mind is that means that you're going to have a big lump sum due at the end of whatever this grace period is. They can't tack it on to the backside because and I know I've seen that question a lot. Is, why wouldn't the lenders just add it on to the principal, right? Add it on to the back end, the total of your loan. And the problem is that they, in order to be able to foreclose, a lender has to show that the deed of trust and the note, basically your terms haven't changed, that they all match up still. So if they start messing around with your payment, you basically have to sign a whole new agreement, and they don't want to do that.
So with all this heavy changes out there with our loans and whatnot, what are the silver linings to this?
Yeah. So I do have a few positives. I really do. So especially like this is happening right now, just in the last day or so, the lenders seem to be opening back up to issuing new mortgages. They're opening up during your escrow. Your lender will do something called a rate lock. And the rate lock is where they really are able to finalize what your percentage, what your APR is, and what the terms are, and really lock them in. And for actually the last couple of weeks, which this isn't something I saw a lot in the news, but for the last couple of weeks, lenders weren't even willing to do that. They just simply weren't agreeing to terms at all for anybody. So that's something in the last couple of days there, they seem to be opening back up and starting to get the wheels rolling again. So that's actually a huge positive thing for people who are either in escrow right now or are looking to start that process. And also the FHA and the VA have relaxed their employment verification requirements. So another part of the process was that when you're in escrow, one of the last kind of things that your lender does is they want to make sure that all of these, this employment, your income verification that you said you have, they had to get in writing or, all these forms done by your employer. And a lot of employers have their HR departments shut down right now, non-essential workers. So they've made that a lot easier to do. You can now show that you're still being paid through direct deposit, pay stubs, or if you have cash reserves for 2 months of mortgage payments, then they'll waive that. And then also, and this is kind of just a small part of the process, I think maybe something we do back of house, we handle a little bit more than maybe our clients do directly, but appraisers that normally would have to do a really in-depth process of insight interior inspection, they've loosened those requirements now as well so that appraisers can do more exterior appraisals or desktop appraisals. So while there's a lot of big programs and a lot of things that are going to make it hard, at least in the immediate future, for some of these unconventional loan programs, they do seem to be making an effort, the lending community as a whole, to try to make this process still work for us.
Well, wow, we have a lot to digest there. So that's a lot. Well, we've got a whole slew of loan changes going on. I'm sure that one good thing about our country is that we do have a way to adapt. So while we do have some negatives going on in the loan world, I'm sure that we're going to adjust. I just don't see the long term these loan programs being gone for any length of time. I mean, perhaps the hotel condo program, but I'm guessing the jumbo loan program will be coming back here sometime soon. So, well, Ashley, I guess it's probably time for us to wrap it up. And I just wanted to remind everybody just to check us out on Facebook at Matthew Lehman Real Estate, or look at our other podcasts we have. And we'll have those available on Facebook as well. And if you have any questions, you could get a hold of me at Matthew@homesmammoth.com or Ashley@homesmammoth.com. And until next week, we'll go ahead, sign off, and say thank you guys for joining.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day. Stay safe.